Set your course for the Hoth system. General Veers, prepare your men.
All troops will debark for ground assault. Prepare to target the main generator.
Echo Station 3TA.
On an Imperial Walker.
Attack pattern Delta. Go now. Watch that crossfire, boys. Right now, I feel like I could take on the whole Empire myself.
Target, maximum firepower.
Imperial troops have entered the bay. Imperial troops have entered.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Echo Base. This is episode number 128, recorded on January 15th. I am sad to say that here in Connecticut, we are firmly back in Hoth. It's turned cold again. We had that 50-degree weather over the weekend. Today was, I wouldn't say frigid, but it was to the point where you're like, man, I want to be inside. how is it up your way,
Joe? Same thing here in Central New York. It's pretty damn cold. I think it's going to warm up just moderately tomorrow. We might actually maybe hit 30 or so, which will be,
I feel like a heat wave.
Kind of, yeah, that's nice. That's nice. Probably see some idiots out in shorts and t-shirts.
probably. Yeah, we're actually looking for some
snow.
Which, by
the way, is not part of the authorized dress code in Echo
Base. It's not, no.
So do not even think about it, people.
Exactly. Yeah, we're looking for some more snow here in another day or so. So we'll be getting probably you had recently, but...
Yep.
Well, you know, we got kind of a slow news week. There's not a lot going on. You know, The Last Jedi is still, you know, in theaters doing well, rolling along, and there hasn't been much news of anything else.
No, there really hasn't. There's not a lot happening. You might want to mention that we are missing someone here.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. I'm just kidding. Yeah, the absent voice you don't hear with us is Eric. Eric is a little under the weather. I think he got bit by the same bug that a lot of us got bit by here at Echo Base that has put him out. Yeah. He's not talking very well. So, you know, the nice thing is anything goes wrong tonight, we can blame him. And, you know, we usually do. So it's good.
I already have, actually.
Oh, yeah?
It's, I have a list.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah, I have a running list. I was actually waiting for one of you guys to be out. So I could just, you know.
Yes, I did. I wasn't that guy.
I'll just read them off as we go through the episode.
Very good.
We're going to have a lot of listener feedback in this episode. And actually, one of them is mine. I'm just going to read through my list of grievances.
Awesome. Okay, Eric. And he's going to edit that all out, you know. So none of that will appear on the show. Let's see here. So what little news we do have is, and there's, of course, a typo in our notes here, but The Last Jedi is officially the biggest film of 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Finally surpassed, what was it, Beauty and the Beast, I guess, was the number one movie. Yep. So worldwide, it's, at the time of this article, it was 1.264 billion, and Beauty and the Beast is 1.263 billion. So just barely beating it out, but... I was glad to see that because I didn't want to have Beauty and the Beast be the biggest movie of the year.
It was, and Beauty and the Beast was a good movie. I did not see it in the theater, but I ended up seeing it on an airplane, I think.
Okay.
And it actually was a really good film. It was really well done. It was very enjoyable. But I mean, overall, 2017 was just a freaking bomb of a year in the box office. So there was not a lot of strong films.
Yeah, I mean, let's see, what else is in the top 10 here? So we have last, and just domestically. So Last Jedi at 595, Beauty and the Beast at 504, Wonder Woman at 412. So, you know, three of those movies on our movie draft would have been, you know, capped. So that's something. I mean, three movies right there. Guardian of the Galaxy 2 at 389. Spider-Man Homecoming, 334, It at 327. It drops down pretty fast. I mean, Justice League just barely cracked the top 10 at 227. Yeah. But, I mean, not a lot of big stuff going on this year. But I don't know. It's still nice to see Star Wars at the top of the list. We've had Star Wars at the top of the list every year for the last couple of years now, right? Is that the way this has worked out? So Star Wars in 17, Rogue One in 16... And of course, Force Awakens in 15. So yeah, that's nice to have a Star Wars movie at the top of every year going forward. I think that's a good strategy to have going forward. Whether or not Solo can do that next year is the big question mark. or this year, I should say.
And actually, that comment rolls pretty well into the next topic that we have, which is that Star Wars has officially taken second place amongst franchises. It's now playing only second to the Harry Potter franchise, or officially, I believe they call it the Wizarding World franchise.
Okay.
It passed Wizarding World and is now second to the MCU.
I was going to say, I mean, that seems awful strange that Harry Potter was bigger than the MCU. But yeah, okay. Wow.
So with that, and you know, even in this article here that I'm referencing, they mentioned that we've got, you know, still kind of a sustained presence of Star Wars films as well as Wizarding World films, with the Fantastic Beasts saga kind of picking things up and continuing on for it.
Mm-hmm.
But really, I don't see either one of them being able to even come close to touching the MCU. The MCU is just a juggernaut that is not stopping.
And it's so wide. There's so many things that make up the MCU.
Yeah.
I don't think Star Wars is going to get there. But, I mean, Harry Potter, I mean, it's going to continue to do well. It's not going to be... There's not going to be as many movies in the Harry Potter franchise as there are in Star Wars or MCU. MCU has just so much stuff to work with. And I think that there are so many variations on different parts of that world that they can keep people happy and interested and be different enough to make it, you know, really viable. Whereas Star Wars, I think you're going to have, you know, the main franchise movies, you know, like The Last Jedi, like The Force Awakens, do really, really well. You're going to have some of the, you know, side movies do really well, like The Force Away, Rogue One. You're going to have movies like Solo that probably aren't going to do all that well. You think it's going to be tough then to make movies that continually draw these kind of crowds every time?
I think so. I think it's going to be a challenge. It's, you know, it's interesting. I think you build up a lot of, you build up a lot of anticipation when you have an absence.
Mm.
And so I don't know that it's necessarily an issue of saturation, because people are still fans and they're still happy to go out there and they're still happy to see these movies. But you just don't have as big of a base for them when you're running them consistently like that.
It's not as broad. It's not as broad of a draw.
Yeah.
So
I think a big part of it is the anticipation, and that's why the prequels did pretty darn well at the box office, because there was such a gap between the original trilogy and them. And then
that's why the Force Awakens did, you know, the biggest movie of all time, pretty much, at least domestically, because there was that sense of, we're never going to have another Star Wars movie in a theater again. And then all of a sudden, hey, here comes one. And people were, you know, rejuvenated by the fact that it was original cast, also enamored with the fact that it wasn't George Lucas doing it. Mm-hmm. So, and I think those things came together as a perfect storm and made, you know, this thing a huge success.
Yeah. And Solo is going to be the fourth movie in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still going to make some serious bank. I mean, we're, you know, not saying that it's not going to do well in the box office. It will do well.
Yeah.
But I agree with you, Lou, that I think in a relative sense, compared to the rest of the franchise, it's probably not going to do as well. But I think Star Wars will continue pulling away from the Wizarding World franchise, despite the fact that, you know, they're still going to be chugging out some films. But yeah, the MCU is so long as the MCU keeps putting out movies and they have no indication of stopping.
Right.
And I mean, really, just with the record that we saw broken in terms of pre-sale for Black Panther last week, I mean, it's just incredible. You know, there's no stopping it, and it, which is great, because they're putting out awesome things, except Ant-Man. So, you know, they're doing really well.
I'd hate to belabor this more, but it brings up a question in my mind of how can... how is the MCU can do this? We're putting out 2-3 movies a year in some cases now, still doing phenomenally well with all these movies. And I have a feeling that Star Wars isn't going to be as successful when they're only doing one movie a year, even. Is it just it's a smaller market? Is it just that there's fewer? I mean, I keep going back to it. It's not as wide of a base that Marvel has. But it seems strange to say that comic book movies are more mainstream, but I think they are.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. And we actually kind of had some of this discussion last night on Random Chatter, talking about trends and how different studios are emulating others and such. And comic book movies really are, they're the hot thing. They have been the hot thing for the last, 8 or 10 mm-hmm. years. And even though DC has had some movies that have done well, we'll say they've underperformed, they've still done well at the box office. The movies that have underperformed have done well. Justice League did well.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at it compared to other films, when you look at it compared to to other comic book films, it didn't do so well. But when you look at it in the big picture of the box office, Justice League seriously kicked ass. I mean, there's no doubting mm-hmm. it. Those comic book movies are definitely hot now, and the MCU is continuing to ride that wave.
I mean, I'm looking at
really with that record that Black Panther broke last week. There's no sign that's letting up.
Yeah, and it still amazes me that they're all still doing well. I mean, I'm looking at the Marvel Cinematic Universe on Box Office Mojo right now, and of the 17 movies that have been released, 10 of them are over $300 million in domestic gross. I mean, $300 million, that's a big number for most movies. I mean, yeah. Justice League didn't do that. No. And of this list, I mean, let's see. The bottom is Incredible Hulk at 134, Captain America First Avenger at 176, Ant-Man at 180, Thor at 181. So, I mean, that's the bottom, and those are still respectable numbers in a movie.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's just, I wish Star Wars would be this successful. I just don't think it's going to have that same kind of draw power. I mean, Solo will tell us a lot when Solo comes out in May, what that movie does, how well it does for all the problems it's had in production, all the people that are saying they don't want to have a Solo movie, but, hey, we're getting it. What that one does for numbers will be, I think, a good tell to me as to what we can expect from the rest of the movies financially in the box office.
Yeah. I think Rogue One did so well because it was still riding the wave from The Force Awakens. Mm-hmm. The return of Star Wars was still a new thing. This was a story that really had not been told before. And so it was very niche and it was very exciting. And I think that drew a lot of interest. Solo, well, the story has been told before, even though they're largely going to be doing a different story as far as we know. But it's an established character, it's one that we know. It's there's just not a whole lot of excitement to get his backstory.
Right.
I'm still hoping that it does well. I'm still very excited to continue to see the Star Wars universe expand and grow and see some new planets and new aliens and ships and tech and all that cool stuff. And, another story in Star Wars is never a bad thing. So no. I'm very excited about that. I'd love to be more excited about the movie. And I think the thing that would do that would be to see an awesome trailer.
I'll keep on your breath.
I guess, we should take at least a few seconds to talk about that. Because in the last episode of Echo Base, we mentioned that there was a rumor that there was going to be a Solo trailer dropping on Good Morning America last Friday, and that never happened. There is, at least as far as I've not heard, there is no other rumor or speculation on a trailer is going to be, aside from the Super Bowl.
That's what I've heard, yeah. Which I guess now that they didn't do last Friday, I guess Super Bowl makes sense. I mean, it's going to have the biggest, audience to show. So,
oh yeah, yeah. This late in the game, it might as well be. And the Super Bowl is another 3 weeks away. So, why not?
Right. Although, why not? What's the spend for 30 seconds of Super Bowl ads right now?
Oh,
it does.
It goes up every year. It is absolutely insane. So. It's a heck of an investment, but
right.
Hey, it's Disney. Right.
They can, you know, they can handle that. So.
I mean, they burp and that money comes up. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry.
Did I get that all over you? I'm sorry.
Yeah. My mouth?
when you mentioned Rogue One again, I mean, that movie to me did really well, not just because it was riding the high from The Force Awakens, but to me, it has everything that I really want in these movies. It's tangential to the stories we already know. So it's set in the same world, and it's close. You kind of know the setting and what's going on. I don't need to see the characters that, you know, we know and love from the original trilogy, but just knowing that this took place at the same time frame, and I kind of know where it is in the world and in the universe, that feels really good to me. So, right. You know, Solo might feel really good to me because I kind of know where things are, and they're going to touch on things that we've heard about and seen in movies. But, you know, like we said before, I just don't think we need that movie. But yeah, I mean, movies like that touch on the stuff that we know and love and don't have to have the characters we know and love, I think work really well for at least for me. So,
yeah. Yeah. I agree. Well, you know, we'll see what comes of it. I mean, it's. I know you and I and Eric and a crap ton of other people are going to be there opening night when it comes out.
Oh, yeah. So. Oh, yeah. As soon as they say pre-sales up, I'll buy my tickets, I'm sure.
Yeah.
let's see. You've got a story in here from ClubJ.net about Leland Chee appearing on Sci-Fi's Fandom Files podcast. I'm not even aware of this podcast, but it sounds like it's something I want to listen to. Go ahead.
Well, it's a fairly young podcast. I think this is only episode 13 for them.
Okay.
I think I had heard of its existence prior to this, but I hadn't listened to it. And actually, just before we started recording here tonight, I listened to probably the first 10 minutes or so of it. And they pretty much dedicated the whole episode, which is about 45 minutes. To Leland, and right in the first couple minutes after their introduction, they jumped right into their interview with him, which is great. Leland does not do a lot of interviews, which is something that Eric pointed out in our chat about the show on Slack here. And Eric suggested actually that we put this article up, and I was initially a little reluctant because some of the stuff that he talks about. The rebooting of the rebooting of the canon and kind of dropping the what we knew as the old EU into this Legends category and that kind of stuff. And it's stuff that we've heard about, you know, now for several years. So it really wasn't news. But Eric mentioned, hey, you know, it's probably worth checking out because we don't hear from Leland a lot. He's not a real avid tweeter. You know, he does have a presence in social media, but he's not as much out there as some of the other notables who work for Lucasfilm. And we don't hear interviews from him that much. But so from the bit that I listened to before the show, and I'm definitely going to continue listening to it, if not tonight, tomorrow, because it was pretty good. But they do talk about, you know, rebooting the canon and the whole EU to Legends thing. They talk about one of the big factors of that being the death of Chewbacca in Legends. Remember they dropped a moon on Chewie, which is, you know, kind of a drastic thing. I mean,
if you gotta kill him, it's an epic way
to
go.
People I'd like to drop a moon on. So, and he talks about the role of the story group, and he does talk some about Galaxy's Edge, and actually on the Sci-Fi Wire website here where they kind of give a summary of the podcast, a little bit of a quote here, which I found pretty interesting from Leland. They're talking about Galaxy's Edge. He says, you're not going to go to Batuu or you're going to go to Batuu and you're not going to see t-shirts with the Star Wars logo on it. You're going to be in an authentic Star Wars environment, and the things that you can eat and things that you can buy and all the things that you will see are all within the world of Star Wars, not baseball caps with Star Wars all over it. You're going to have that because fans are going to bring what they bring to the experience. But from what the park gives to fans, it's going to be authentic in universe. And that to me is just so encouraging.
When I read that quote, I was like, man, this is what I really want. I want to be immersed in Star Wars. I want to feel like I'm there, you know, in that kind of quote from him. gives me, like you said, a lot of confidence that we're going to have something we really want to go see when we go see Galaxy's Edge.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure, you know, they'll have their giant souvenir shop at the exit where you can get your t-shirts and baseball caps. But while you're in there, I just think it's great that, and pins, it may be Legos, maybe even Black Series. But while you're in that environment, I appreciate that they're trying to keep it authentic to what we know and how we expect it to feel. So that to me is just really exciting. Right.
I mean, you know, how many times have we talked over the last, say, 6 months or a year about either pop-up bars or bars that have been made where you feel like you're in the world and, you know, people can go and cosplay and do their own thing and be in that world where you feel like you're at the cantina or in a CD bar on Coruscant somewhere. I mean, that just sounds awesome to me.
Oh, yeah. It's just that kind of immersive experience just makes it fun. I want to feel that I'm on some backwater planet in the Star Wars universe. And that's what I want.
I'm definitely going to have to listen to this.
And I think a lot of other people
I think so, too. I'm definitely going to have to listen to this podcast because I really want to hear his take on the whole, you know, like they call here the decanonization of stuff that was the EU is now Legends. We all have our thoughts on to why they've done things and what it is, but to hear it right from the horse's mouth, so to speak, is going to be, I think, good for me and good to listen to hear because, I mean, you know, they're not doing this to hurt us, to take things away from us. They're doing it because they want to give us a good product going forward, and the best way to do that is to kind of have a blank slate. So, I want to hear his take on how he says that same kind of thing. Because I'm sure that's what we're going to get.
They do indicate in the article here on Sci-Fi Wire that, you know, he mentions he was not part of that decision.
Okay.
At the time, but because he is part of the story group now and because he has been, as they call him, the keeper of the holocron, he can have a lot of reflection on that decision, I think. And I really do think it was unfortunate because I was a huge fan of the EU, but I think it was the right thing to do. There was just too much for them to have to navigate moving forward with movies. Mm. They would just end up simply remaking books. And you always get criticized when you remake a book. You know, some people liked the book, some people didn't like the book. You have to change some things because books and movies are very different. It's not just, you can't just photocopy a book and say, well, here's your script. It doesn't work that way. You know, completely different mediums. So,
and even if you
just ends up being so much that has to be changed.
And even if you had the author of the book involved in writing the screenplay and doing the movie, you know, number one, authors aren't screenwriters. So there's that disconnect. And then even when you have that happening, sometimes there's so many changes being made, even with the author involved, because they wanted to change something that they didn't care for in the book, or they wanted to make it better visually or something. I mean, and I'm looking at you, Stephen King, when you do your stuff, when you put it to screen, it's like, this isn't even close to the same movie I saw. But I'm excited going forward. So I think we'll have some good stuff. I can't wait to hear this podcast now.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's, and like I said, I've just gotten through the first 10 minutes or so of it, and it seems to be really good.
Cool. Well, next week, Tim, as you mentioned, we are going to have the entire network online together for a really in-depth look at The Last Jedi. And I think you were the sap that volunteered. I mean, the host that volunteered to run this podcast next week. So. More power to you, because it's like herding cats with all of us, I know. But this is going to be fun. It's the first time that all of us have sat down to discuss The Last Jedi and do that. We've done it separately. I mean, Eric and I did it after the show. I think the three of us did it again on another podcast after that, the week later. Mm-hmm. I just did an episode with Chris, Andrea, and Ernie from When Nerds Attack to do a review for their network. And I'm looking forward to getting all of our takes on this. And I purposely haven't looked for a lot of other reviews because I don't want to have those tape my thoughts until kind of we've all talked about this. So, you know, I may be bringing up stuff that you guys may have been discussing online, and I've kind of stayed out of our Last Jedi spoilers channel in Slack, because I didn't want to have that thing taint my thoughts on stuff. Sure. So I'd like to have you guys kind of maybe sway me back from certain things I liked or didn't like, and hopefully I can do the same for you guys, because it's exciting. I mean, I've seen it twice now, and I think that's enough for me in the theater. I'm waiting until it's on video when I can get that home and watch it frame by frame almost. But yep. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this discussion. It should be a good time.
Yeah, I think it'll be a lot of fun. I did reserve the Officers Club here at Echo Base.
Oh, nice.
For it. So, nice. Yeah, we're going to bring everyone in, and I think it'll be a good time. It seems, you know, everyone's looking forward to it. We've got most, if not all, of our hosts are locked in for it. And it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to kind of emceeing it a little bit. I'm going to make sure it's not or at least try to keep it from being a free for all. I think, you know, have a handful of good focused questions in there to kind of steer some of the discussion instead of just having everyone kind of, you know, vomit out there randomly their thoughts on the movie.
Yeah. This will be easier to control than our movie draft is too. So you'll be okay with this. You'll be okay.
Yeah, it'll be fun though. So that's we're doing that next week. In it will be coming out on the Echo Base feed. It will be actually officially Echo Base 129, but we are doing that in lieu of our normal Echo Base show. But definitely be on the lookout for that. I think it's going to be a good time. We'll have some good discussion.
Right. Yeah, we're recording that on the 22nd, which means it'll be released sometime during that week. Mm-hmm. So, well, before we get to our listener feedback, we had we teased a few weeks back that we're going to do a listener feedback show. We're going to do a lot of feedback in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Tim's been kind enough to kind of curate that and put that aside for us. But before we do, Tim, since Eric is not here and I did it last week, I think you're up for the fun fact and or trivia.
I am. So you may have, some folks may have had a chance to listen to it. Lou, do you listen to NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me?
Sometimes. I haven't listened to it recently, but I do. Okay. Yeah.
Well, a few days ago, they released their most recent episode, which has Rian Johnson on as a guest.
Oh.
And I don't listen to Wait, Wait religiously. My wife does. And so usually when an interesting guest comes on or a guest that she thinks I would find interesting, I usually make sure to jump in and listen to it. So when my wife and I were out and about today running some errands, we listened to it. It was a great episode. Had an opportunity to listen to a couple of different interviews with Rian Johnson, and he is actually an outstanding interview. He is a great conversationalist. He has terrific answers. He has really good stories for things, and you can just tell he is so enthusiastic about Star Wars, and he's so engaged with all these things that he does, and he is a lifelong fan. So that's just really cool to see that, you know, it wasn't just a director that comes in, and you can kind of tell from the stories that he tells that he's not just saying, oh, hey, yeah, I've always been a Star Wars fan, love Star Wars, it's great stuff. No, he truly is. So you haven't listened to us. I'm going to throw this question out to you and you can take a shot at it and answer it. Since you haven't listened, you probably won't get it right, but, we'll put it out there for our listeners.
Okay.
In his interview in Wait, Wait, he mentioned that as a kid, along with a lot of his friends, they would kind of get out there and, you know, they would play act different things that they were interested in. And Star Wars was one of them. And he had a video camera. So this is, you know, one of the things that apparently got him interested in becoming a director, because they would kind of film their own things with their friends, and in a lot of cases using action figures. He mentioned in this interview that there was an action figure that I think amongst other action figures that they may have blown up by attaching a firecracker to it. So Lou, would you care to take a stab at what that action figure was that he specifically mentioned in this interview?
So now I'm assuming it's going to be a Star Wars action figure, correct?
Yes, okay. This is Star Wars. And I'll even tell you, that it is, that it would be a New Hope action figure.
Oh, okay. Okay. I was going to ask if it was original trilogy or prequel trilogy. It's a New Hope action figure. Wow. I am going to say 3PO.
That's actually a really good guess, because if there was, you know, an annoying figure to blow up,
I mean, I know if it was one I was going to blow up, it would be 3PO, but...
But no, that is not right. That is not correct. He actually mentions that it was a Jawa.
Really?
They you know, strapped.
Why would you blow up a Jawa?
A firecracker too, and blew up that poor little Jawa.
Poor little guy.
But yeah, so definitely, you know, it's wait, don't tell me has its own feed, or you can get it off the NPR feed. And yeah. For folks who may not have listened to it, it's kind of a, you know, game show style show podcast. And it's fun. It's a lot of fun. They do some good things with it. They have some interaction with callers, and they have a featured guest every week. So definitely give this episode with Ryan Johnson a listen.
Yeah, their stuff is fun. And they put together people that you don't normally think would go together sometimes, yeah. too. So. Yeah, it's a fun listen.
Yeah, and they talk about the real focus of it is current events. They kind of grab current news and they discuss it, and you know, sometimes it's very prominent stuff. The president happened to make a very particular comment about other countries a few days ago, and this episode definitely jumps on that. But they also pick up some more obscure news items, and that's kind of one of their regular things that they do, is find these little obscure news items from around the country and talk through them. It's all in a very comedic environment, so it's a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, thank you very much. Well, now, since you did almost the curation, I'm going to turn the mic over to you then and let you kind of delve into the feedback that you've curated over the last few months.
Okay, cool. So yeah, we have a number of them from probably the last 3 weeks or so. Really, a lot of it's been since Last Jedi came out. The vast majority of it is Last Jedi oriented. The first one I'm going to bring up, though, is actually not Last Jedi oriented. This is a bit of a response to your question from last week, Lou, on the actors who played Darth Vader.
Right. Okay.
This comes from John in New Jersey. Hi, John. And so what he lists here is, and he breaks it down between Vader and Anakin. So for Vader, he has David Prowse, Hayden Christensen, Gene Bryant, which he says, according to Wikipedia, played Vader in episode 3. So that would be the final scene where Palpatine, you know, rebuilds Anakin as Vader. Even though there is some video of Hayden Christensen wearing the suit. So. There's some potential conflict there. We would have to take a look into Wikipedia or Wikipedia to see what's going on there. Spencer Wilding, Daniel Neprouse, and Bob Anderson. And there's my dog in the background. so let's see, between those three, Spencer Wilding, Daniel Neprouse, Bob Anderson, I would have to take a look in there and see who played what. One of those obviously was Rogue One. Would have been Vader in Rogue One. The other two, I don't know. Do you happen to know? Yeah.
No, it doesn't ring a bell to me as well.
And then voices, James Earl Jones and Ben Burtt. He says if you include some of the vocal effects, which Ben Burtt did a lot of.
Yep. Yeah,
Anakin, we have Jake Lloyd, obviously, Hayden Christensen, Matt Lucas, who did Anakin in the Clone Wars micro series. We oftentimes forget about the micro series. And even though that's not canonical, it is a visual medium that we had out there for a small bit. And then certainly Matt Lanter, who did Clone Wars Rebels and Forces of Destiny for Anakin. So. So John, thank you very much that added, I think, one or two names to our list, certainly.
Yeah. I mean, that list certainly has grown more than I originally thought it was, in the beginning. And I thought I did a pretty exhaustive search, but Obviously, I was wrong. So, no, that's awesome to have there. And I was just looking at IMDb here, and Gene Bryant is listed as Darth Vader uncredited. And I thought I had seen that Hayden actually donned the suit and wanted to don the suit and kind of begged for it and got it.
Sure.
But yeah, interesting.
Yeah, well, I wonder what actual parts Gene did then, or maybe they did an initial shoot and they didn't have Hayden come back for some other, secondary shooting or something. And
maybe they just let Hayden put on the suit and say, yeah, well, you know, maybe they said, okay, Hayden, you put it, okay, fine, yeah, humor him, get the scene done, and then, okay, when he's gone, okay, let's get the other guy in the suit and really shoot the scene.
Yeah, hey, you never know. You never know. All right, so our next one here comes from Daniel. He says, hey, Echo Base crew, just heard episode 126 and the Easter eggs that Eric brought up. I think I found another one when Luke is on Octu. If you haven't read the Legends of Luke Skywalker novel, this will be a minor spoiler. So breaking in here, I have not read Legends of Luke Skywalker. Lou, have you read that yet?
No, I have not.
Okay.
Nope.
Are you okay with a minor spoiler? This doesn't seem to be a real big thing here. So yep. Daniel says, when Rey is following Luke around the island, wanting Luke to train her, Luke crosses a large gap in the island by jumping onto a long pole to traverse that gap. So if you remember that scene, he grabs that pole and he swings across it. Then when he gets to the other side of this gap, he uses that pole, which has a spike on the bottom of it, strikes that pole into something in the water. And during the next scene, you see Luke walking down the island with a large fish type thing on his shoulders, and Rey's following him. So Daniel says, this seems to be a nod to Luke going through the trials on the planet Luel. He goes through training to learn how to follow the flow of the tide. The last trial he needs to complete is on a winged beast. He needs to catch a fish with an absurdly long spear, and he has to catch a goldfish. I don't know if that's the, little like things we put in our bowls or if this is a Star Wars goldfish that's, spacefaring or something.
It might just be a bag of little crackers with the, Parmesan cheese
on it. Those are a good snack. Yeah. Luke does complete this trial and catches a huge goldfish that he releases back into the sea. If you spear a fish, that's kind of definitive. I don't know that he's releasing that one back to the sea.
True.
But that's good to know, Daniel. Thank you. That's it does show, I always like to see that they have these similar threads from story to story. So that's a nice thing. Yeah, that does definitely seem to be a little bit of an Easter egg. So thank you for that.
Yeah, that's cool. The while we're on the same topic of him doing that, pole vault thing over to the wall and stabbing the fish, and you see him carrying a fish, but how did he get that fish up?
He didn't
pull that pole all the way up. I mean,
that's a good question.
I've seen it twice now, and both times I'm going, how did he get that fish all the way up to that little ledge that he was on, and then, swing back over to the other side again on that pole with the fish on his back? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, because that pole is, 40 feet long or something? I mean, that was...
Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah, that was pretty big. So, no, that's a good question. That's a good question. Our next bit of listener feedback comes from Jeremy. He says, hey guys, I recently found your podcast. So new listener, Jeremy, thank you for joining.
Yes, thank you.
And giving us a listen. We definitely appreciate it. It's great. And the opening audio is awesome. Well done. I don't think he's talking about your introduction. I think he's talking about the music. I mean, I'm sure he likes your introduction too.
Okay, thank you. I feel bad.
I have one thought about Snoke that I'd like to bounce off you professional Star Wars fans. Wow. I feel like we got a promotion.
Wow, yeah.
Thanks, Jeremy. Actually, that's really all we need. I don't even need to talk about your question here.
I'm going to get business cards made up now.
He says, like you, I'm curious about Snoke's backstory. However, I loved his death scene, and I'm satisfied with the end of his story arc. And actually I am too. While I would like to see more, I do think that what they did with him was really cool. Oh, Lou has reservations.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a very small arc. I mean, I'm happy with it and it was okay, but I just, yeah, we didn't get him developed very much.
No, I totally agree. And I would like to see more about Snoke's backstory. I have a feeling that's going to come up in books and comics. They might tell something about it in episode 9, but obviously Snoke is done. He's gone. He's dead.
He is, yeah.
While talking to Rey, I think Luke Skywalker explained the flaw that led to Snoke's downfall. Hubris, like the Jedi, who have failed numerous times. I think Snoke's largest weakness was his own overconfidence and self-absorption. I think it's a powerful statement to make that even the supremely powerful being needs to exercise a bit of humility and self-scrutiny. Snoke assumed Kylo was his pawn. Kylo is clearly unstable, yet very powerful. It's foolish to think you can control such a combination of qualities. Thanks for the entertaining podcast. Regards, Jeremy. Lou?
Yeah, I mean, it's a plausible explanation of it. I mean, I think that fits with everything we've seen. On the second viewing of it, I felt that scene where he actually does get impaled with the saber, I felt much better about it the second time. Because, you know, you knew it was coming and you could see it and you're listening to the words and what's going on. And now it all, it played into that. You know, it worked really, really well. And I felt much better with the second time. And that really is the reason why he did, perish. You know, I mean, he's so self-confident. He didn't think anything was going to happen. He thought he knew what Kylo was doing and didn't.
I think the writing and direction of that scene was great because Snoke obviously could read Kylo's mind, but not to those most granular details. You know, he's talking about the positioning of the lightsaber and striking down his enemy and all that stuff.
Turning it towards your enemy. And he actually was as he was doing it.
Exactly.
But he didn't realize that he was the focus of his energy in there.
So it was a really cool scene. And it was just the writing and direction of it, I think, was just really cool. And I enjoyed it the first time. And the second time, like you said, knowing it was coming, and I kind of look at it from a different perspective, I'm thinking, wow, Snoke thinks this is what's going to happen, and that is not what's going to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. And especially when, you can look at that compared to just how powerful he was and how effortlessly it was for him to do anything he did, whether it was, throw Kylo back across the room or hold Rey where she was and do that kind of stuff. And this is him doing this to people that are, like Kylo, who was able to stop a blaster bolt, in midair and leave it there for a good five minutes then have it do it. It's like, wow, if he's that powerful and this guy is making him look like a rag doll, and that is to me the shame of the whole Snoke thing. I really want to know, his backstory, how he was so powerful, where'd he come from? Sure. Who was he? But I think that his explanation of hubris here is really a good one for how Snoke met his end.
Yeah. And I think really it seems to be a common thing. It applies, I think, just as well to the Jedi in the prequel trilogy. It applies just as well to the Emperor in the original trilogy. And in this, it certainly applies to Snoke. So I think that's kind of a constant theme, that you have the very powerful but overconfident individual or individuals who end up taking the fall because of their overconfidence.
And this mirrors back to Return of the Jedi, when Luke says your overconfidence is your weakness.
Yeah. So, Jeremy, thanks again, and certainly thank you for being one of our new listeners. We appreciate that. All right, so our next one here is from Paul. The title of his email was The Last Jedi Disappointment. And it's a long email, so Paul, forgive me, but I am going to paraphrase a little bit as I go through some of this, but I will definitely make sure that I capture the highlights and kind of the general concept of your email here. He says, guys, I think you've hit upon the biggest problem that The Last Jedi presents. How do we react and what do we do with the schism forming in the fandom? That's a big question. That's a really big question. I think a very important question. I would not dismiss the low user or viewer ratings in Rotten Tomatoes. I know there's rumors of a Reddit campaign and bots, but based on my own informal polling, that 50-50 split is pretty real. Half my friends liked the movie and half didn't. I fall in the latter category. It's the first time I've been disappointed in the middle of a Star Wars movie. Just to give you some perspective, I loved The Force Awakens, maybe not right away, but it really grew on me. I really liked Rogue One, especially the third act, though the first two acts were a little slow in my opinion. So I'm not one of those who is turned off by The Force Awakens, but after The Last Jedi, I now understand and can empathize with those fans who thought TFA was too derivative. He says he wonders if Disney didn't overreact to TFA criticism and it being a copy or being derivative. He mentions, let's see, some problems in execution. Too many contrived plot lines with plot holes that were way too big that kept pulling me out of the movie. Ryan's rope-a-dope style, i.e., you thought I was going to the right, wrong. I'm going to go to the left just because you expected me to go right. Insert the no one expects the Spanish Inquisition joke here. Very nice. I just to kind of break in here a bit, I do agree with that part. It was, and I think I mentioned this before, that there did seem to be a lot of misdirection in the movie, which in my first viewing distracted me a lot. And it's not that I want a movie to be predictable, but it just, there seemed to be too much of we're going in this direction, and then you just kind of get grabbed by the back of your shirt and yanked in another direction. And my second time around, because I knew what was going to happen, that improved it a lot for me. But boy, the first time I really left with kind of a bitter taste in my mouth from that.
Well, there's one thing about misdirection, and there's another thing to have. I mean, all misdirection is purposeful, meaning they're doing it to lead you the wrong way. But there's one thing where you have a movie where it does, okay, this is leading to this direction, we're going this way, going this way, going this way, and all of a sudden, for no reason at all, you make a turn to the other side with nothing that foreshadowed that. So to me, good misdirection is when you watch it the second time, you can see the subtle clues that says, no, we're going this way, we're really going to go that way later on. If they don't set those seeds for you along the way, then I feel like you just did a bait and switch on me. It's not really misdirection. It's just blatant. You lied to me, you know, and that to me doesn't set well. And there was some of that in this movie, but not as much as other movies I've seen. So, you know, I mean, but I think that people were more pissed off about that than they would be if it was a real misdirection where, yeah, I'm giving you the, you know, I kind of come back to think of, you know, The Sixth Sense. The first time through, if you didn't know what was going on, it's wow, that's a shocking thing. But when you back and watch it the second time, all those things make sense. Yeah. And you're like, yeah, okay, that was really masterfully done. And that's what I really want to see. And I don't think there was as much of that in The Last Jedi.
12 Monkeys, too.
Yeah.
The movie, not the TV show. The movie is one of those things that at the end of the movie, you're like, what? Really? Seriously? And then you have to watch it a second time. And then you're like, oh, okay, now I get it. But it's it's not an old movie, but it's an older movie. So some folks may not have seen it, but if you haven't, go see 12 Monkeys. There's a lot of misdirection in that movie.
Oh yeah. But it's good misdirection.
So let's see here. We do have he kind of details, and it's nice detail. It's a little too detailed for, I think, reading through item for item on the show here, but he lists out, you know, here's a lot of the good things that I liked. Here's some of the things that I didn't like. And there's not a lot of surprises in it. I think it's split fairly evenly in terms of what a lot of the popular things seem to be and things that we've seen in social media. You know, he likes the opening scene. He likes the interaction between Mark Hamill and Daisy Ridley, the interaction between Adam Driver and Daisy Ridley. And I agree. I mean, they did really well in those things. A lot of the visuals, the throne room battle, that kind of stuff that he lists as a lot of positives. In things that he didn't like as much. Well, the sea cow milking. Yeah, that made everyone cringe.
Right.
Hyperspace as a weapon. I'm going to read this one just because I liked the concept. I thought it was pretty cool. So he says hyperspace is a weapon. So I guess this is a thing now. Like I said, the visuals are awesome, but here's the problem. If it's a thing, why didn't they use it against the Dreadnought earlier or against the Death Star 1 or Death Star 2? I guess we don't have to worry about Star Destroyers anymore because we can just hyperspace and X-Wing through them. It's a bold choice if you really want to change the dynamics of space battles in Star Wars, because now no one will build big ships because they're too expensive to build and too easy to take out. It would be a fascinating tactic to explore and could really make things interesting in the Star Wars universe going forward, but I don't think that's their intent. I don't disagree with the points you're making here, Paul. I think that kind of is a game changer. I think the concept of you know, essentially a kamikaze type sacrifice is a big deal, and that's probably why it was never used before. But it would also make sense to say, hey, we're going to ask for volunteers. Who wants to fly this ship through that giant moon thing? Because we think that's going to kill it.
Yeah, and you know, this is the same complaint I've had with this, and I brought it up on the When Nerds Attack podcast that we did, and I'm going to bring it up again on Monday when we do our roundtable. It is a game changer in the fact that it changes tactics and changes strategy forever now, because now we know it's a thing where you can take a ship in hyperspace through another ship, and it destroys it.
Yeah,
I mean,
and it makes sense. It definitely does make sense. I mean, that's there are things. I mean, especially in the books where they would in the old EU books where they would talk about, essentially why the interdictor cruisers would work, because it would create these gravity wells and that would flip the sensors on hyperspace on hyperdrives and make them not work, because that's the safety mechanism. So you don't fly through a planet.
Right. And that's going to be the way they're going to combat this probably down the road, is now every fleet of Star Destroyers has, you know, several interdictor cruisers with them that can just, you know, limit any hyperspace travel near them at all. But my point was not even asking for volunteers. Now we just build small drone ships that we can, you know, use as unguided missiles that you just point and shoot with. Build a small ship that's unmanned with a hyperspace engine in it, and you can take out a Death Star, take out the what class of ship is Snoke's new where is it?
His super duper Star Destroyer?
The mega class Star Destroyer is what they're calling it. You can take one of those out with a small ship with a hyperspace engine. And I think aside from the whole thing of, you know, could it or could it not happen, it's just that it's a game changer as far as strategy goes.
Yeah, it really is.
And then what do you do?
Yeah. So it is a big game changer, and I agree. I mean, you could take basically a bunch of hyper drives and put remote controls on them, and now we have this little fleet of small aircraft that can just freaking destroy anything. I think it was cool in the movie, but it does have implications, and it does bring about questions of other things. Let's see, what else did he think? Did he not like too much here? Slowest space chase ever. There was a reason for it, but yes. Let's see. The issue with Leia and Haldo not telling Poe the plan, and there's been a lot of stuff in social media about that interaction. And actually in a couple of weeks, we're going to have a guest here on Echo Base. That's one of the discussion items that I want to have with that guest, because he happens to be United States military, because a lot of this is chain of command stuff is what it really comes down to. And I've worked a lot with the military to know that pretty much everything in this was appropriate. Poe's behavior was not. I'm not a big fan of Poe from this movie. Let's see, Leia flying through space, Finn being irrelevant. Basically, Finn could have stayed in a coma the whole movie and it wouldn't have mattered. He's not wrong. He's not wrong. I mean, nothing changed in terms of what Finn and Rose did through the story. Nothing, you know, it's the Indiana Jones principle.
Right.
You know, that basically none of their actions impacted the outcome of the film. It still made for a good storyline, and I think it was a very relevant storyline, but I do agree with that. And then, yeah, so, you know, he has a few other items in here, including Phasma, which, you know, that was a big bummer. So let's see. So why is it okay for a Star Wars fan to not like the movie? I've noticed a trend among Star Wars podcasters to always preface any criticism of the prequels with something like, just to be clear, we don't hate these movies, but. He says, why can't a fan hate the prequels or The Last Jedi or be mad at Rian Johnson for bleeping up a glorious opportunity? I get that excessive negativity doesn't get us anywhere, but neither does false positivity. Another way to look at this, and Eric, you might have to have someone to help you with this, but I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan and I hate the Washington Redskins. Hey, you know what? I'm a Giants fan, and along with hating the Giants because this season was abysmal, I'm not a big fan of the Cowboys or the Redskins, so I can sympathize. He says, I apologize for the sarcastic tone in the email, but I'm disappointed, frustrated that this is the film we got. I understand better now why certain fans didn't like The Force Awakens. And we're not helping the fandom by people screeching, you're not a real fan if you don't like this movie. And that has happened to me. To me, it's a big issue. We can debate the finer points of what is or isn't a plot hole, but the real problem is that we have a schism in the fan base. So what's Disney going to do now? I get that you want to expand the Star Wars universe, but if you turn off half the fan base, what have you accomplished? Paul, and like I said, I just kind of picked certain parts of the email here. He had a lot of other things, but that's, you know, largely the gist of it. And like I said, Paul brings up a really good point. There is a divide in the fandom. I've never seen a movie create such a divide like this before. There's a lot of people that really love it. There's a lot of people that really hate it. And I think there's a good number of people who, like me, are kind of in the middle. It was an okay movie. You know, it was a good movie. There were things I didn't like. There were things I really did like, and there were things I thought were eh. So I don't know. Lou?
Yeah. I mean, I'm in the same boat. I mean, I thought the movie was good. I mean, it's better than some. It's not as good as others in the franchise. Mm-hmm. And I think that as it ages with me more, it's going to get better and better, personally. Mm-hmm. I just like the movie more for what it didn't give us than what it gave us. You know, not using Snoke, not using Phasma. Mm. You know, wasting these characters basically is just, in my opinion, something that they should not have done. Just like wasting Maul in The Phantom Menace. I mean,
yeah,
you know, here you had a great character that you just killed off. And it's like, okay, well, so much for that. But yeah, it's a strange scenario now that we're in this climate where it's almost like a civil war among fans, much more so than it used to be. I mean, there was battles going on when the prequels came out, but that was more about kind of, you know, generation versus generation, yeah, and where we were. Now it's more about, well, no, it almost seems to me like there's too much entitlement, I guess.
Yeah.
It's people that say that you know, you owe me this movie, and that is
horrible.
I don't know. It's horrible, but it's also, you know, it's spelled out clearly when you see things like, let's do a change.org petition to get this movie dropped from canon. Let's get Rian Johnson fired from the next three movies he's going to do. I'm sorry, you're not entitled to anything that you think you're entitled to as far as what they're giving us, you know, for a movie. Yeah. It's not yours. It's someone else's property to do with what they want to. And if they don't like the movie, vote with your dollars and don't watch the next one. But You know, it's I have this hard time where people feel like they're entitled to get something that they don't really have any right to.
Oh, I totally agree with that. It's fine to not like a movie. You know, I think it's cruddy. I think the sense of entitlement is cruddy, and I think that people attacking people either way is really cruddy. It's, you know, if you loved it and someone says that they hated it, to attack them for hating it is wrong. And if you hated it, it's wrong to attack someone who loved it. We can all have some good, intelligent debate, and we can bring these points up. And you know, let's be adults over this. So, let's see. Our next listener feedback here is from Anthony. His is much shorter. First, I liked the movie, didn't love it. The only reason for not loving it is there was no lightsaber fight.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, the throne room battle wasn't really a proper lightsaber fight, since the Praetorian Guard didn't have lightsabers. They had other weapons, which seemed to counter them, but that was a really cool fight. He says, still, yeah, I've seen the movie 3 times. When Kylo was asking Rey to join him, did that remind you of when Vader asked Luke to join him so they could rule the galaxy as father and son? Absolutely. It looks like Kylo is moving faster to be supreme leader, just like Vader wanted. It looks like when Kylo said he wanted to finish what Vader started is coming to life. And yeah, maybe, I mean, we don't, it's still kind of a bit of a mystery of what Kylo Ren meant in The Force Awakens when he, you know, was speaking to Vader's mask and saying, you know, grandfather, I'm now going to finish what you started. What did Vader start? I don't know. So yeah, that's interesting. She says, love all your shows. Keep them coming. Anthony. Thank you, Anthony, very much for the feedback. Thank you for listening. And yeah, there are certainly a lot of similarities that we see there. And that also opens up some other questions. So, our next one here comes from Tim, not me. Not me. I was just kidding. This is not my laundry list that I'm going to blame Eric for. This is from Tim, who is he's a member of the 501st. So, Tim, thank you for listening. Thank you for writing in. He says, hi, guys. Just a response regarding the believability of Leia in space. In the Clone Wars animated series, Plo Koon survived outside of an escape pod in vacuum, although he was conscious and he also had a breathing mask on. In Rebels, Kanan was spaced and managed to survive. I realize that these are animated shows, but still considered canon. Good points. In the Legends books, there were one or more times where Luke and maybe others survived short periods of time in space, although they probably had flight suit time. I don't see where an X-Wing pilot could survive in their flight suit and helmet, but we're dealing with fantasy and not pure science fiction. I've been enjoying the show for a long time. Thanks for your hard work. Yeah, you know, Tim, it's for me personally, it's less an issue of suspending my disbelief of Leia surviving in the vacuum of space and just the fact that I didn't personally like the scene. I think that they would have done just as well with having that being Leia's death and moving forward with the film. I don't think that there were severely pivotal moments after that, which Leia was involved in, that they could not have written something slightly different to write her off. I just didn't like it. And it also had some weird CGI. It made her look a little awkward.
Mm-hmm.
That's my issue with it. But yeah, Tim, I definitely acknowledge and I do recall the issue, the item with Plo Koon and with Kanan. And you're absolutely right. Those are considered canon, so we have seen that before. Lou, anything in particular on this scene in Tim's comments?
No, I mean, I agree with everything you said, Tim. I mean, this is something I didn't care for, like you, but the part about her being in space and not dying wasn't the most unbelievable part to me. The most unbelievable part was her, you know, doing the whole, you know, flying nun thing to come back to the ship. It just didn't work well. It didn't look right to me. And I think part of it was also my expectation too. I mean, we all expected her to die in this movie, because she passed in real life, and then we knew we had to get a satisfying ending for her. And when that scene happened, I was like, I was almost at peace with it, because I'm like, okay, that's sad, but it works. I can live with that ending of Leia. And then when they focus in on her, I'm like, okay, now we have to have the extended death scene where we're going to, you know, just be a little sad about it and show her up close. And then when the hand started the movie, I'm like, oh, no. So to me, it was about an emotional thing and the way they did it. I was okay with the whole survival in space thing.
Yeah. All right. So our last listener feedback.
Take a deep breath.
Comes from Mike. I could call him by one of the many other names that I've been calling him over the last few weeks. The history there is in Slack. We have a couple of Mikes, and this Mike, AKA Erasure, I've been calling him all sorts of other names, not like inappropriate names, not like four-letter words or anything. Mike writes some long stuff. We love you, Mike. Truly. So he says, hey, Eric, Lou, and Tim, why in the world am I last? That's issue number one. All right, Mike, that is it. I'm going to build a list of issues that I have with your email. That's the first one. I'm last. He says, right up front, sorry for the long email. Feel free to take what you find interesting in here and read on the podcast or not. Well,
okay, there you have it.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, sorry.
Thanks for your permission, Mike. First of all, great work on the latest string of Echo Base episodes. They've been fun, and your speculating is both interesting, if not also hilarious. Sorry, guys, I don't think the Thrawn trilogy is happening on the silver screen. Well, that's where I'm ending this. So let's see. Finished up Echo Base 123. Want to write in a few episodes back on comments about The Force Awakens and the whole homage rehash of A New Hope. I especially appreciated Josh's email, which you read on episode 123. Let's see. He has a little commentary on that. He says, yes, Eric, I also agree that some of the comparisons aren't exact, like the Han mentor thing versus the Obi-Wan or Qui-Gon mentor, but I will say they certainly are meant to be portrayed in the stories as the wise old mentor and the father figure type characters. Yeah. I mean, I can kind of see that both ways. And I remember the email from Josh that we were reading where he pointed that out. He says, I won't say I didn't enjoy The Force Awakens, far from it, although with the new Disney era movies, I like Rogue One more. Initially, TFA held much more appeal at first because it was shiny and new. And I agree. I was actually right there. I was like a huge fan of The Force Awakens right after the movie. And then after watching it again and a few more weeks passed, I was like, yeah, no. Right. I liked it, but not as much. Although even on first viewing, a few things stuck out at me, which my opinion has not changed on. One of which being that I feel TFA is the weakest of John Williams' scores. Not a bad score. It was just underwhelming for me. That's it. We really haven't talked a lot about like a comparison of scores. And that's an interesting comment. That might be something that we want to talk about more later on. But over multiple viewings, the shine came off. I can see exactly what Josh says is the primary reasons why TFA feels like a rehash versus the Phantom Menace, which has parallels. None of this detracts from the TFA entertainment for me, though. It still is a great Star Wars movie. I feel the reason that Eric and Lou don't feel cheated by TFA is directly because of the nostalgic elements tied to the original trilogy. Lou has remarked plenty of times that episode one, for instance, was not the story he wanted to see. And Eric, I know you have been accused of being a prequel hater, whether incorrect or not. I think it's fair to say that both of you have a strong love for the original trilogy, probably much larger than the prequels. Over the years, I think I'm finding I actually may be enjoying the depth and story perspectives in the prequels more. And I really love the tight story arc planned through all three episodes and the ways in which they expand Star Wars, new environments, and even politics and subterfuge. Which I agree with. I am I still like the original trilogy more, but I really do enjoy the prequel trilogy, especially episode one, which I know a lot of people don't like, but I'm big on episode one. Last Jedi may redefine how we look at The Force Awakens. And yeah, I think it does. I think a lot of us have looked reflectively back on The Force Awakens as being the first episode of this new trilogy. Mm. And The Last Jedi, I think, changes some things for us in The Force Awakens. It changes how we look at some things, maybe both good and bad. Lou, any particular thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I'll say one thing to add to that is that, you know, seeing, I had watched all the movies up to The Last Jedi before I went to see it that night. In fact, I watched The Force Awakens in the car on my phone, leading, you know, during dinner and leading up to going to see The Last Jedi. And it made it a much nicer thing. I mean, those two movies being that they dovetail together so nicely are a nice thing to watch back to back. And I thought it did make The Force Awakens a better movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All in all, I would agree with that. Mike does, he has, I think, some good comments here. As a side note, I don't agree with it selecting a diverse cast for The Force Awakens was taking a risk for Lucasfilm. And for Disney with the movie. Actually, I'd say it was quite the opposite. In today's social culture, including Hollywood, it would have been much more risky for TFA to not have had a diverse cast of actors and actresses. I totally agree. To me, taking risks for LFL with these movies means doing what George Lucas would do in the past, tell a good story without regards to specific fan groups or business execs, pushing the technology in the industry, which George Lucas was very much known for, through a lot of his films, telling the story that needs to be told regardless of social or industry conventions and norms, following the mythology rules from before and expanding on them, relating perhaps to current cultural events, such as Wars View today versus back in the original trilogy days. Don't cater to people, push the art form. I like a lot of statements that you had there, Mike. So in closing here, he says, here's the next 10 years of Star Wars and beyond. I personally can't wait to see what the future holds for the franchise. And I'm really excited that after the Han Solo spinoff with Ryan's trilogy, we might finally get some truly new risk-taking stories and movies again. I have high hopes that The Last Jedi is going to deliver on this as well. I don't expect an Empire Strikes Back rehash or homage film. I guess it's relevant here. Mike's email to us came on the 12th of December, so it came before The Last Jedi was released. So that's why he has a big focus here on The Force Awakens and some speculation on The Last Jedi. So, Mike, thank you as always for the emails. We do make fun of you for long content, but you really always have some very well thought out and meaningful stuff, and we definitely appreciate that. So,
definitely.
Thank you for listening, and thank you for this email and for all your contributions. So that wraps up our listener feedback. We had quite a list, and we wanted to make sure that we got to it before we got too much longer down the line. So that we've accomplished that mission, Lou.
We have, and I think we did a good job of that. So I'm glad we got through that stuff. It was good to hear some thoughts and
keep it coming, folks. You know, if it's sometimes when it comes in ones and twos, we will try to read them pretty soon after getting them. If we get a whole bunch of them like we did this time, it was kind of expected after a big movie, you know, we save them up. But keep them coming in. We definitely appreciate them. And especially if you send them by email, that keeps it kind of upfront because I flag those emails and keep them on a list for us to get to. So sending things by way of Twitter or something or on Slack, if you're on Slack with us, is great, but it gets lost.
Yeah. Much easier. Yeah. So in regards to that, since we're wrapping this up, I will say that you know the best way to get a hold of us is email, like we said, and that email address is echobase@randomchatter.com. That does go to all three of us, Chris, Tim, and myself. Best way to do it, you know, put it
Chris?
In.
Chris?
Eric, Tim, and myself. We were talking about Chris before, and I got so wrapped up in the fact that he's so negative again. I had it in my mind. Sorry about that, folks. So, yeah, Eric, Tim, and myself. You know, keep them coming. Like I said, they're great to have. I do enjoy reading them. Even if you don't read them all in the air, we definitely do read every one of them and try to incorporate them as we can. Thank you. I guess I'm still going here.
You're
going
to continue.
You can find us online. Eric is not with us, so. I know. Playing the role of Eric tonight is Lou. So you'll find us online, facebook.com/randomchatternetwork. You can find us on Twitter as well for the podcast. It's at Echo Base Podcast. You can also find the whole network at Random Chatter. You can find me on Twitter at Lou Secchi. That's LouSecki. You can find Eric. It's Eric Blythe, ERIKBLYTHE. And Tim, where can they find you?
Qui-Gon Tim, that's Tim with two M's.
Nice. And of course, you can find all of our shows over at randomchatter.com.
We definitely appreciate that you spread the word and support us. It was awesome to get all these emails and hear from folks who we haven't heard from before, folks we have heard from before, and some folks who have mentioned that they are new listeners, and we love that. So if someone is a new listener, they found us somewhere. Either someone told them about us, or they happen to be scouring iTunes or something like that. So please be sure to help spread the word and support us. Tell your friends, your family, coworkers, anyone who you know loves Star Wars. Hopefully they will enjoy our discussion as well. Leave us some great reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever it is that you happen to find your podcast. Click on all the stars, write in some good narrative in there about why you like us. And that will hopefully help draw some people over to us. Also, Patreon. You folks, if you've been with us, you've heard my pitch. Patreon.com/randomchatter. Every dollar that you folks can contribute to us helps. It definitely does keep the lights on here. We had expenses last year of, things like website hosting fees and data storage and some recording equipment and software and that kind of stuff. And certainly as we grow and expand, we have more shows, we're bringing on more hosts, and all that stuff does cost money. So while, we don't mind throwing some occasional dollars out of our pockets, it is nice to get a little bit of love from our listeners as well. So patreon.com/randomchatter. And we always try to give back. So even a dollar a month gets you access to our Slack community, which is a lot of fun. We reference it all the time. You get to interact directly with Lou and Eric and myself and other hosts, as well as other listeners and fans. And it's a good time. Going up from there, $5 a month, $10 a month, etc., gets you additional perks. So on top of access to Slack, you get things like exclusive content and things that don't get released out to the public and fun stuff like that. So let's see. The music you hear on this podcast is the Imperial March by Cell Dweller and the Force Theme by Scandroid.
And that does bring us to the end of this episode. So we will wrap it up here, close the blast doors, and see you guys in about a week.